This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio, cutting-edge thinking for being youthful at every age. On each program, I interview experts on what it takes to live longer, healthier, and happier. Our program takes a holistic approach in addressing anti-aging psychology, medicine, alternative medicine, fitness, nutrition, and wellness. Our emphasis is on innovative thinking and practices that have solid data and results. Who do you want as a hero? Someone who swims 6 hours a day and consumes 12,000 calories a day so he can swim a half second faster than everybody else? Or maybe someone who's really good at catching a football? Or someone who models living a long, healthy, happy life? I think our society is a little nuts when it comes to its hero worship of athletes and rock stars and movie stars. Yes, they can teach us about focus and perseverance, but who can teach us how to live a good life? For that, we need role models with exceptional spiritual depth and deeds, but we also need role models who know how to navigate the largely uncharted territory of living well into our hundreds. Centenarians, people 100 years and older, are those role models. Lynn Peters Adler has dedicated her life to documenting centenarians' lives and learning their secrets. She is author of Centenarians, The Bonus Years, and as director of the National Centenarian Awareness Project. She recently played a key role in the Barbara Walters special, How to Live to 150. And we have a special treat for you. On the second half of the show, we'll be talking with a centenarian who may well have a richer social life than you and I. Lynn, I've been wanting to have you on the program for a long time. I'm delighted that you can join us.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Lynn, only a third of Americans say they want to live to 100. They fear living to 100 means disability and dementia and poverty and spending the last years of their lives in a nursing home, probably crippled up in a wheelchair, drooling, and the highlight of their day, nursing home food. From the thousands of centenarians that you've talked to, why should somebody want to live to 100 years or older? Or more specifically, Lynn, why do you want to live well into your hundreds?
Because I think that there is a great deal of potential, and what you've just said, unfortunately, has been true for a lot of people as they age, but it doesn't need to be true from here on out. With my experience of over 23 years, I've seen a whole generation of centenarians, and I've seen the vast improvements.
So it's getting better and better.
It is getting better and better, and it's going to continue to do so.
Now, you told me 39 years ago you were off to Woodstock.
This very day, 39 years ago, I was making my way at 5 miles an hour.
And then you had a law practice. What got you from Woodstock and a law practice to chronicling centenarians' lives and fighting ageism?
Well, because there's actually a parallel, I think, between Woodstock and what I've been doing for the past 23 years. It's my belief that centenarians have been exceptional examples. Active centenarians are exceptional examples for defying the odds, breaking the mold, going against the stereotypes that you just mentioned, and showing us what is possible. The 60s were all about change and what we could do to make the world better, and I think that it's up to us, the baby boomers, and particularly those of us at the leading edge of the baby boomers, to bring about significant changes in the way we age and the way society is going to treat us as we age, and to set a new standard. And I think we can do it.
Gee, I wish we had an Olympics for aging well and we get gold medals and silver medals for people who just were phenomenal examples.
I thought of that last night.
I gather at times you wear a detective hat. How do you find the centenarians? And when you do find them, how do you approach them and get them to do an interview?
First of all, the most important and the most difficult thing, and it hasn't gotten any easier in 23 years, the most important thing is to have people tell me about centenarians. Finding active centenarians is really, really difficult. If anyone knows of someone 99 or over, I would be really appreciative of having them call me at 1-800-243-1889, or they can go to my website and email me.
And the website is adlercentenarians.org, adlercentenarians.org, and
correct.
We'll say that again later. I'm surprised that it's that difficult to find them. Are they trying to keep a low profile? Or?
No, not necessarily. They're busy leading their lives. It's not that they don't want to be found. It's just that unless someone's in the newspaper or has been brought to attention or has come to me in some fashion through my website, I have a registration on my website and I send out certificates to everybody who registers a centenarian. And unless someone actually tells me about centenarians, I have to do really a full search. I call and I send letters. It's still difficult.
When you do get the phone number or address of somebody, is there a little distrust there?
Mm-hmm. Sometimes it is, but fortunately, I have an impeccable record and a long history of doing this, as well as a really good resume to back it up with. As you said before, I do have a law degree, and I am very active. For example, I'm on the Governor's Council on Aging in Arizona, and I was chairman of the Mayor's Aging Services Commission, and I'm very involved in the community. I'm on the Attorney General's Task Force on Elder Abuse, and I am very, very well grounded and have been for many, many years, because this is really my passion. Talk a lot about passion,
mm-hmm.
and a large part of what I do is advocating for better treatment of all of our elders so that people aren't living the way you just described.
But Lynn, I don't know that telling somebody you're an attorney is going to give them more trust.
Well, I would hope so, because my fifth specialty was elder law. And
let's be honest, the biggest fear that people have is poor health. Of the centenarians that you've talked to, how many of them are in poor health and how many of them are quite spry?
In general terms, Michael, about 50% of the centenarian population suffers from some form, sometimes severe, of dementia. And it's an area that medical science has been, in my view, very lax in addressing. It's something now that I think, with the rise of in age of baby boomers, there's been a tremendous amount of attention now paid to it, and it's a good thing. A little late, but it's a good thing. So immediately we have to discount about 50% of the centenarian population, which is tragic. Once medical science, and I am optimistic, once medical science starts helping us with how we're going to age better mentally, I think a lot of the physical disabilities that occur in people as they age will also improve. Because when one has the mental capacity to do something about it, that's the first step.
So for somebody in their 90s, currently you have about a 50-50 chance of not having dementia, but I think in the next 10 years, or at least within 10 years, we're going to see some major breakthroughs with Alzheimer's, which is at least half of dementia.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And as I said, it's late in coming. And in my book, in my first book, which was published in 1995, I had a whole section in about Alzheimer's and really a plea to the medical profession to do more research and have more funding and do more in that area, because it totally detracts from a person's quality of life. And I can understand why people would say that they are not so enthusiastic about living to 100. I am, because I see the opposite. I see the other 50%. And I've known thousands of centenarians over the years, so I know what is possible if we not only live long but age well. And that's the reason that I'm so optimistic.
So for the centenarians who don't have dementia, what aspects of their thinking is quite sharp and what aspects are maybe a little slower or not as good as in our 20s or 30s?
And first of all, we have to be realistic. We all have to know that 60, we're not like we were in our 20s and 30s. But I would say that perhaps, and this is pretty well known, people's reaction times to things, but it's not impossible. People are slower, for example, in being able to react, but not necessarily slower in remembering things. And so there was a study done recently that was interesting that said that it wasn't comparing centenarians, of course, but comparing older people in their, say, 70s and 80s with younger people, there were different forms of learning, but they pretty much came out the same. It just took older people a different route.
Mm-hmm.
Get to the same answer.
And indeed, in Centenarians, the Bonus Years, you talk about several people who are college professors and people still running businesses and dancing and sculpting and doing all kinds of amazing things in their hundreds.
Absolutely. There are some people who are still working, so, as you mentioned before. When I grow up, I want to be like Elsa. I mean, she's fantastic. Whenever I think of her, the song Cabaret comes to mind. She's just absolutely a fantastic person. I'm glad that you're going to get to meet her and your listeners are going to get to meet her.
What about physical health? How does that hold up for centenarians?
Every centenarian will tell us that the most important thing we can do with our lives as we get older is take good care of our health. I think that there's so much more awareness of that now, and I think we're all working at it. Exercise is extraordinarily important, and almost every active centenarian I know exercises in some fashion. Centenarians are very cognizant of the need to keep both their mind and their bodies as active as possible, even if it's only riding a stationary bike, if that's all they can do, but they'll do whatever they can do.
And I think people need to realize that we're not talking about extreme exercises. Matter of fact, people who do extreme exercises, if you look at a lot of the Olympic athletes, awful lot of those people have had multiple surgeries and are going to have knee problems by the time they're 40. We're talking about being very reasonable and using your brain when you decide what kind of exercise to do.
Yes, moderation is the key, but I just want to mention something, you just made me think of it, Michael, that, for example, Elsa had double knee replacement when she was in her, I believe it was her late 80s, and most centenarians I know have had some major form of medical intervention on their way to 100. Now, there are rare exceptions. Every once in a while, I just was talking to a woman the other day who was 108 and said she takes no medicine, her health is fine, and her mind is certainly fine, but that's an exception. Most people have had something go wrong. I think we need to be aware of that. If things will go wrong, we need to get them fixed. I don't know if you've noticed the latest literature, but there's been a lot of articles now about how the medical profession is much more willing to take a more aggressive approach to treating people in their later years. And I think that's really bodes well for those of us in the baby boom generation.
An Anglophile friend of mine said that the Queen Mother, who was one of the most marvelous centenarians, had knee replacement, I think, when she was in her 80s. And so the ritual is that they wheel you out of the hospital in a wheelchair, and she said, absolutely not. Stood up and walked out in high heels.
Isn't that something? Well, now that's what I call the centenarian spirit. Would you like to hear about what I have found that centenarians have in common?
Yes.
Thank you. From a humanistic approach, we're off the topic of medicine and into lifestyle and into what I call the art of aging, because there's both a science and an art to aging. But what I have found that carries people through, and I think that we should all adopt the centenarian spirit, is the following. First is a positive yet realistic attitude. The second is a love of life, which includes a sense of humor, because centenarians like to have fun, and there's no age limit to that. The third is a strong spiritual or religious belief. The fourth is personal courage, and that goes to the points we were just talking about of having medical interventions when they're necessary. And the fifth is a remarkable ability to renegotiate life at every turn, to accept the losses and changes that come with aging and not let it stop them. Centenarians are not quitters. That can-do spirit and that determination, that self-determination that you've just used as a wonderful example with the Queen Mum, is something that I see and hear every day and just love it.
I think the list that you just gave is the real key. We have this funny ritual that when somebody turns 100, the reporters come out and knock on the door, and they say, well, what's your secret for living to 100? And we get these bizarre answers like, it's broccoli or it's prune juice, you know? I even saw an article in the paper recently. It was eating termite eggs.
Oh, my God. I haven't seen that one.
I think they don't know, and so they make something up. But the real answer is what you just said.
Thank you. I appreciate that. The other thing is that centenarians don't necessarily feel their chronological age. 100 is the new 80 for some. It is. And like Elsa, when you hear her, you'll see. They don't necessarily feel 100. So some people will say, if someone asks, you know, how does it feel to be 100? They'll say, it doesn't feel any different than it did yesterday. They're just wonderful, wonderful people. They've got such great spirit, and they've got a great sense of humor. They're just wonderful, wonderful people. I would encourage everybody to go find a centenarian in your area and meet that person.
Take them out to lunch.
And take them out to lunch, because they love to go out.
I'm curious, do centenarian men strike you as having any different qualities than centenarian women?
Yes, they're a little more active on the whole. Now, there aren't as many. 85% of the centenarian population are women. But of centenarian men, there is a noticeable difference in how many are active.
You mean they're playing sports?
Very few are still playing sports. For example, John Donnelly, my friend in Florida, has been going every couple of years to the National Senior Games, and he plays table tennis. About 10 years ago, I took a friend of mine, Ben Levinson, to the first time a centenarian had ever participated in a senior game, and he was a shot putter. And then he was on Jay Leno, and he broke his own record, and it was great. So sometimes it's athletics. There's a lot of men who are still playing golf, a few women too, but mostly men, who are still playing golf. But in addition to that, the use of computers, Michael, has just grown exponentially in the last 5 years, I've noticed it. But mostly with men, not exclusively, but mostly with men.
Tell them about the T-shirt that you have a picture of Ben Levinson wearing.
Oh, yeah. A it's on my website. And there's a T-shirt that Ben had made up for himself that he wore during one of the practices at the senior games. He's got the shot put in one hand, and he's got this T-shirt on that says, "Oh, to be 100 again," because he was 103.
I love it.
I was thinking of that just this morning. Oh, to be 100 again.
Were all the centenarians very positive, optimistic people, or are some of them like Johnny Carson's character Aunt Blabby and other crotchety stereotypes that the comics come up with? Were there a few vinegar centenarians?
There are plenty of vinegar centenarians. Each person has his or her own perception of what's positive or what works for them. We tend to make judgments and we tend to want to homogenize people, particularly as they get older.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that we as a society need to change because, of course, we baby boomers think of ourselves as individuals and individualistic and creative. And so do centenarians. There's a tremendous parallel between centenarians and boomers. Really, there is. People can be crotchety, what would appear to be so to us, but they don't think of themselves as negative. If you ask them, they'll say, "I'm not being negative. I'm just, being myself."
Telling it like it is. So what are the parallels you see with boomers and centenarians?
It's that desire to be forever young. Like Neil Young's song, "Forever Young," is that desire to not necessarily act one's chronological age, to do the very, very best one can with one's life and make the very most of it, to bring about as much change as possible for the better in the world and in society. There are centenarians who are making magnificent contributions to philanthropic ways in their families, within their communities. It's extraordinary what people are doing.
It's like they got the boomer values several decades in advance.
Yes, they did. And they're passing them on to us. They're passing the torch.
We'd like to think of when you get older, you get wiser. In what ways would you say centenarians are wiser because of their age?
I think it's that old adage, Michael, experience. They've been there, done that. When they see it again, they recognize it.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite that simple. I personally think that wisdom is an overdone word, been around for so long. And I don't think that centenarians necessarily think of themselves as wiser than other people.
So perspective would be a good word. Are there some other good terms?
I think you just hit it with perspective. That's good.
Lynn, what are you trying to accomplish with the National Centenarian Project?
Trying to accomplish a couple of things. First of all, advocacy. We've been talking about what's good about being a centenarian. What's not so good about it is, and this just doesn't go for centenarians, but also for people in general as they get older, is the way our society treats our older people. And that actually was the impetus for my work. I feel that as a society, we have a lot of improvement to make because the older people become, the more we have a tendency to want to shun them, I'm going to use that harsh word, and not include them in what we do, not include them in our daily lives, and not have them integrated into our communities. And I think that's wrong. And certainly we boomers are not going to like that one single bit. So I think we better do something about it.
So the biggest single injustice in your mind is that we want them out of sight and out of mind.
Mm-hmm, yes, and that we feel that they no longer have a place in society, and that's just not true. We have a rich, wonderful country. There's plenty of room for everyone, and that should include our elders.
You and I were talking right before the show. We're very much in the same wavelength of, rather than this business about aging gracefully, which makes me want to gag, that you're saying you want aging excellence.
Put it in my book, and I'm going to be writing more about it in the book I'm working on now. My message is that we, the boomers, have the potential to go way beyond our parents' standard of aging gracefully to create a new standard of aging excellently. And I think that active centenarians are showing us the way. They're showing us it's possible.
There's an interesting parallel in medicine I was just reading about, that initially doctors were just identifying and telling people what to expect, and then they got into treating it. Now the new paradigm is preventing it. So we've got a nice parallel with medicine that's going to help with the paradigm shift that you're talking about.
Yes, you're right, and really glad.
We're talking with Lynn Peters Adler, author of Centenarians, the Bonus Years, and director of the National Centenarian Awareness Project. Her website is adlercentenarians.org. That's her last name, Adler, A-D-L-E-R, centenarians.org. The 800 number, again, if you can identify somebody 99 years or older, is 800-243-1889. And if you miss those, I'll have them on my radio website, agelesslifestyles.com, which has all of the previous programs that you can download or get information on. We'll get back to Lynn and our special guest in just a minute. But first, did you ever wonder why some people look, act, and feel more youthful than other people their ages? Would you like to know their secret? Their secret is They think differently. Adopt their mindset, and you too can think, feel, look, and be more youthful. Check out antiagingspeaker.com. That's anti-aging-speaker.com to learn how I can help you and your organization or company learn the secrets and develop a youthful mindset. Aging is mostly a mental game, and you need to know the rules. anti-aging-speaker.com. And now back to Lynn. Lynn, you're also working on a new book. What's the difference between Centenarians, the Bonus Years, and the yet untitled book?
Harking back to your previous question, in the book I'm working on now, it will also provide the other parts or components of my program, which is inspiration. I think it's really important for people to be able to go onto my website, for example, or read one of my books and see what people are doing at 100 and more, and say, my gosh, if they can do that at 100, to hear someone 103 years old say, I'm enjoying every day of my life, it doesn't get any better than that, Michael. A huge part of what is going to be in my new book is really directed toward inspiration. My first book was more on advocacy, but this is going to be a book about inspiration and also positive role models, as we said before, for people not only in the baby boom generation, but for our parents and people in their 70s and their 80s and their 90s.
So you've had a paradigm shift from identifying and describing to showing how to have more excellence.
Exactly. That's exactly right. And I learned it from centenarians. Everything I know about aging, I learned from centenarians. It's true.
We're going to call Elsa. What would you like for us to know about Elsa before we get her on the phone?
First of all, I would like you to know that you can go to my website and you can see some pictures of Elsa. She was one of the centenarians who traveled to New York for the Barbara Walters show. We had a wonderful time. It was taking five centenarians to New York was really an experience. We had a blast. You'll be able to go onto my website. There's a section there that says behind the scenes, and there's a lot of pictures of Elsa and the story of what we did in New York and things like that. So that's the first thing. But secondly, I'd like you to know that Elsa lives alone. She lives independently. However, she is extremely active in her community. I'll give you just an example. This will sort of set the stage for Elsa.
Mm-hmm.
A year ago, for her 100th birthday, she bought herself a brand new car. Now, how cool is that?
Very cool.
She then booked a cruise for January to celebrate her birthday, and she threw an absolute gala celebration. It was more like a wedding celebration for her 100th, living the good life at 100, and God bless her. And now she's approaching 101. Such a good time on the cruise last year. She's going again this year in October.
And didn't you tell me when she picked her car, she purposely picked one that would last a long time?
Well, first of all, she picked a luxury car. She picked something with longevity because she wants it to last as long as she does. And she also picked one that is an eggplant color because, as she said, it's a little different.
Mm.
Gotta love it. Hello.
Hi, Elsa. This is Mike Bricky.
Oh, hello there. I've been expecting your call and looking forward to it.
Hi, Elsa.
How are you, dear?
I'm wonderful. How are you?
Great.
So, Elsa, are you starting to feel like a celebrity?
I sure do. This past year has just catapulted me into another life, it seems. And even though I have a very exciting life, the past years have just been absolutely marvelous. If I may put a quote in that I used before, Lynn knows that my golden years are like sparkling diamonds.
Wonderful. What's a typical day like for you?
A typical day is have breakfast around 8 and then off to the club around 9:30 for cards and luncheon and some more cards, and then perhaps do errands on the way back home and have a leisure dinner at night or with friends. And that is, I would say, almost a weekly day. Every day is busy with something on that order.
And Lynn told me when she called you this morning, you were ironing your clothes.
Yes. I had things that I wanted to iron and or press, nothing that was urgent, and I just didn't feel like doing it. But this morning, I know that when I don't feel like doing something, there comes a day that I just feel like it's a joy, and that's when I do it.
If I may interject, Michael, I'd also like to add in that, Elsa, are you still doing your exercise program? You had
yes, yes.
Tell Michael about that.
Well, I've been going to a physical ed place that I do exercises by the bar and going up steps, exercises sitting down for strengthening the lower leg muscles and balance.
Elsa also uses a cell phone, which is very contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
And then, Elsa, you also attend a lot of galas and charity events.
Yes, yes. That's why I say most of my days are occupied with something. As they say, never a dull moment. And when I do have some free time, I use it to rest and build up some of my energy.
Do you get to socialize much with younger people?
Intermingled. I would say my composite age would be around 55, 60, because I'm with family quite a bit, and there's always young people, and I enjoy that. I don't know if I should bring this up, but about a month ago, I was asked by the teacher of my great-grandchild if I would speak to the first and second graders, because they didn't believe that my great-granddaughter had a great-grandmother who was 100 years old. And I said I'd be delighted to. You know, with the attention span of the young people, it's pretty shaky. But I kept them entertained, and they kept asking questions and answering questions for over an hour.
Well, the way you were talking, I thought you were going to say you got a marriage proposal.
I've had those, too.
After 100 years, do you have any regrets?
Not one. As the song goes, if I had my life to do over, I'd do the same things again. I've just had an unbelievably happy, wonderful life.
And Elsa, if I may interject, Michael, Elsa, at your gala celebration for your 100th, you requested a song that you felt exhibited your...
yes, I'll do it my way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a dear friend that's a well-known singer. He sings a lot of the popular songs, and that was one of them.
Lynn, what else would you like to ask?
I'd like to have Elsa tell, in her own words, about how she last year decided to buy a new car, celebrate her 100th. And I think that Elsa is really enjoying life at 100.
Oh, yes, I do. And every time I get into the car, I feel so safe and snug and confident and grateful for the privilege of being able to drive.
And then also, Elsa, point that I think is really important for other people, you have a very active social life, and you stay involved with people. And you are very proactive in doing so. You don't just sit around and wait for people to come to you. And I think that's really important for older people to get that message. Don't you think?
Yes. To have an objective is very, very important. I love people, as you know. One of the important things is to do what you can to make others happy. That has been my philosophy in life. I know that early in life, after we were married, my husband and I did extensive traveling, noted that quite a few travelers just didn't seem to be getting much out of their well-earned vacations. And so our projection was that when we had the time and the money, we were going to have a place that we would make everyone that came to our place enjoy themselves, and that's what we did. We trained our guests to welcome each new person that came in. We had a place for 20 years, and that's what we accomplished, and we're part of the most wonderful parts of our life to have had a place now that people would come and say they couldn't realize how much they enjoyed their vacation. So it was very rewarding.
That was a resort that you and your husband...
Yes, Jasmine Villa in Pompano Beach.
So you not only were proactive yourself, but you got other people, you taught other people how to be proactive.
Well, that is my whole activity in life, is be useful, and if I see someone that needs a little uplift, to do what I can to pick them up, just to see a stranger going by that looks a little down, just say, good morning, how are you? And it makes a tremendous amount of difference.
I think that's an excellent point, Elsa. And I know, Michael, I have to interject that whenever I call Elsa, which is quite frequently...
She cheers you up, yes.
I call Elsa, I feel better.
Elson, when you talk about objectives or goals, are those something that you've written down?
Not necessarily. My feeling of doing something was to have this place that I was instrumental in making so many people happy. I had no experience before. I just ran it as I would a house party and had wonderful help. Guests became lifelong friends. It just seemed to be a natural way of doing a thing. I would plan a luau. I would plan to see that we all went together to some a very special restaurant or on shopping tours, and always looked for something unusual, boat rides, everything to make a person happy in doing things.
And you've also enjoyed a lot of cruises.
Oh, yes. The idea of having one of my own was, when I say my, because my husband, I was privileged to have somebody who gave me then to do as I felt I could accomplish something with. And with his support, of course, it was a very, very successful place. And I did these things, not the idea of making a huge amount of money. It was the idea of having a place that was lovely. People wanted to have a good time, and they had it. And we would sing. My husband was quite a pianist. We had a Sunday afternoon happy hour, pretty fast and purest cocktails. And then we would sing and play musical instruments of violins we had. And one of our guests was from Canada, was a bagpiper. He would go around to the different places that we had occupied there, play the bagpipes to come at 5 o'clock, a happy hour time. Guests that were chosen to act as hosts for us, we always would select two other gentlemen, and they were all dressed in jacket and tie, and the ladies wore lovely dresses. Just had real fine time.
Where did your very altruistic values come from?
I think from my parents. They were very gracious people and entertained a lot. As a child, it was always people over for dinner and always some singing. It was a joyous time. And then I used to play the piano, and then when a husband came, he could play anything and everything they asked him to. So basically came from my parents. And then, of course, they took me out at an early age when they went to, sometimes they call them balls, dances. So it was always a lovely time, and you'd go to lovely hotels. So I think I learned how to handle things that way.
And Elsa, you're still enjoying cocktails and going out and
having
good times.
Every day.
And then also you were very active playing golf for many, many years, and you still do occasionally.
Yes. No, I stopped playing golf about 5 years ago, but this past year they had an event that social members did the putting and the golfers did the driving. That was quite a lot of fun, and I participated in that. Of course, they make a big fuss over me, which I love.
Which you love, yes, of course, and you deserve. And you're quite a fashionista also, Elsa.
Yes.
Look perfect all the time.
That's what I was doing. The incentive for getting these clothes ready was what to wear on Sunday, because Sunday I've been invited to cut the ribbon for the dedication of a large building of our church for education purposes and for the church social activities. And I was privileged to be asked to come, which was a great honor. And I was pressing and ironing different outfits which ones I might, because my daughter said, I'll leave it up to you now. What do you think you'd like me to wear? So that was an incentive to get tackling the ironing business.
Michael, if I may just ask Elsa one more question, something you had touched on before, but Elsa and I haven't really talked about it, and I'd like to get her perspective. Elsa, do you think that we learn coping skills as we get older?
As you grow older, you see how you couldn't. It doesn't just come with being on in years. It comes as you're growing up. And also, if I may, one of the main things I think in life is to be able to handle stress and worry. And the whole object of worrying is to face it and see what you can do about it and make the best effort you can. And if nothing develops, just dismiss it. Think of other things like transcendental meditation, which I am quite into, because worry is not going to make anything better.
Elsa, some people may think, oh, you probably had an easier life and that's what helped you live to 100. What are some of the most challenging things that you've had to deal with or biggest losses that you've had to deal with in your life?
Well, let me see now. Well, I would say that when I married, of course, my husband was in the roofing business, and he had a very nice trade there. Although I did learn in with my father's business, too, handling people, being able to go with the flow sometimes and then other times to make your point and do it in a way that's not going to hurt anyone. Interesting real estate deals. But one of them was, I think, about the only one that I could say we lost money on was an apartment here in Florida that was being built, put a big deposit down, and as the progress made, we wanted to show it. For some reason or other, they would always say, well, it can't do it for insurance purposes, things like that. Always seemed to have an excuse. And then when it came time to put final substantial payment down, there was bickering amongst the owners. My husband said, well, at our age, between 60 and 70, let's just get rid of it. And that's the way we did. We just got a lawyer, and we feel that that was another learning experience. And any time that there was a problem, don't think of it as a problem, but as a learning experience.
You know what I think you just told us? When I asked you about adversity, you had trouble coming up with something. I would be thinking of, well, there's the Great Depression, and there were wars, and there are a lot of people that I loved very dearly that I lost. But you just don't dwell on those or focus on those. You're very focused on what's happening now and what's exciting about life now.
Michael, I would like to interject something to your point, and that is that contrary to the perception that older people live in the past, most active centenarians are surprisingly contemporary, and while they have happy memories or perhaps not happy memories of the past, they don't dwell there.
No.
And I think that that's the point that Michael was making, right, Michael?
Exactly.
I mean, that you don't dwell on the past.
Oh, no, no.
You're a contemporary woman.
I'm always looking forward to concerts. A couple of months ago, Andre Rue had a wonderful concert down here. I have tickets for the Sarah Brightman concert. One of her big highlights was with Phantom of the Opera years and years ago, and she's still giving concerts. Love music. Everything from opera down to, and I shouldn't say down to, because I enjoy country music very much. So part of my life is focused on music.
Elsa, it's just absolutely marvelous to meet you and talk with you. And thank you for taking the time out of your busy party schedule to talk with us.
I appreciate, I feel honored, and hope to have the privilege of meeting you someday.
I'd love to.
Thank you, Elsa.
Thank you, and bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
You know, Elsa may not have had some regrets, but I have one. I lived only about 10 miles from Verona Johnston, who at 114 was currently the oldest person, and I kept procrastinating trying to meet her. Read that at 114, she lived in this Frank Lloyd Wright-style house, climbed up the steps each day to the second-floor bedroom, could do math in her head, and had an excellent memory. So one day, this is the detective hat we were talking about, I called the library in her suburb, and I said, is there any way you could ethically get me her phone number or address? And they said, oh, yes, she and her daughter come in here all the time to get books. They said, well, they vote in all the elections, so we can just check the voter registration. That's public information. And so I called, and her daughter said that just in the last few weeks, she had become very ill, and about 2 weeks later, she died. So I missed an opportunity of a lifetime to meet another person to Elsa.
Centenarians are a fragile group. We have to be realistic about that. If anyone has an opportunity to meet a centenarian, I'd say go for it. What an extraordinary example. The current record holder as the oldest person in America and in the world is in Indiana, Edna Parker, at 115. And I had the privilege of knowing two who were on the list, Christian Mortensen, who lived to be over 115, and Fred Hale, who lived to be about 113. I'll tell you, being in their presence is almost a spiritual experience.
Indeed. You're busy trying to make people aware of centenarians, and with the Barbara Walters special that you helped out a lot on, what impact do you think that had?
Well, first of all, let me say that in her book, Audition, which is a bestseller, she mentioned toward the end of it that how to live to 150, we can do it special, and particularly meeting the centenarians was one of her favorite specials of her career. And given whom she interviewed, that's a big statement. She was very, very wonderful with the centenarians, and she was also very impressed with the centenarians. I think that it gave people an opportunity to see what centenarians were capable of doing, to travel to New York. And also traveled to New York, four others did, and one of whom, one of my dear friends, traveled by himself. It really, again, helped dispel that stereotype that growing old is nothing but decrepitude and disinterest in life that you had mentioned at the very beginning of the program, and I think that it went a long way of showing that that's not necessarily true, and it surely doesn't have to be true for those who have the benefit of seeing what needs to be done and what we need to know in order to live well into our 70s, our 80s, our 90s, and hopefully to 100.
Exactly. We're talking with Lynn Peters Adler, author of Centenarians, The Bonus Years, and director of the National Centenarian Awareness Project. Her website is Adler, A-D-L-E-R, centenarians.org. Notice that's .org. And if you know somebody 99 years or older who isn't already identified, please call 800-243-1889. Again, that website is adlercentenarians.org. It has profiles of centenarians, a sign-up for her blog, tons of information and pictures. And if you miss the information, I'll have it on my radio program website, agelesslifestyles.com. Lynn, your book, Centenarians, The Bonus Years, is just a marvelous read and very inspiring.
Thank you, and it's still in print.
Yes, and your next book is, what, a couple years off?
Oh, no, it's coming out next year. It's coming out in 09.
I can't wait.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, Lynn, thank you so much, and the wait to meet you was well worth it.
Thank you so much, and I appreciate that, Michael. Thanks for staying with me on it, because, you know, centenarians take up a lot of my time. And again, I encourage anyone to, not only just centenarians, but everyone of advanced age. Elsa made the point of bringing happiness or a little brightness into everyone's day. And as younger people, we all have that kind of support around us. But as we grow older, it falls away very often. And we don't come up to someone and sort of pat them on the back in the supermarket and say, good job growing old. But we could, or at least to say hello, as Elsa said, at least say hello and how's your day?
You bet. It's time for commentary. This show was a special treat for me, as many of my ideas about staying youthful came from studying centenarians. So it was a special treat for me to meet Lynn Peters Adler and to meet Elsa. Both Lynn and I are trying to spur a paradigm shift from aging gracefully to what I call being ageless and what Lynn calls aging exceptionally. For me, being ageless is not being tethered to any particular age. There are times when you can get down on the floor and play with a six-year-old like you're 6 years old yourself, and times when you want to play some ball like you're a teenager or in your 20s, and there are times when you want to draw upon perspective and experience that comes with living many years. So you time travel to whatever the occasion calls for. And one of the beauties is, the older you get, the richer your repertoire of ages. Things just get better and better. Your repertoire gets richer and richer. Just for contrast, many of the longevity people are emphasizing physically trying to live forever, immortality, if you will. And with today's advancing technology, it is becoming a possibility. Lynn and I independently have come up with lists to describe the traits of centenarians. And while we use different words, the essence of them are remarkably similar. Lynn's list is, 1, a positive, realistic attitude. 2, loving life, including having a sense of humor. 3, strong spiritual or religious beliefs. 4, personal courage, with an emphasis on facing medical problems. And 5, renegotiating life at every turn, including accepting losses and changes. My list for centenarians is, 1, they're active mentally and lifelong learners. 2, they're self-reliant and independent. 3, they're optimistic. 4, they have a good sense of humor. 5, they have good coping skills. And 6, they don't hold on to losses or resentments. After today's conversation, I think I'm going to add that they primarily live in the present. Thus, while many people who are aging gracefully are often focused in the past, people who are vital centenarians are far more likely to be focused in the moment and in the present. Elsa was a marvelous example of all of these traits. She also had an exceptional sense of purpose and mission in life and was very proactive socially. One of the things we heard from Lynn, we saw modeled with Elsa, and we increasingly see in the research literature is the importance of exercise to living well into your hundreds. And exercise doesn't have to be exhausting or brutal workouts, just a reasonable amount of exercise that addresses strength, stamina, flexibility, and balance. Balance becoming even more and more important with age. I think after today's interview, I'm going to discard the idea of wisdom and instead use the terms experience and perspective. I thought it was fascinating that the centenarian men are more interested in computers than women, and I hadn't thought of the similarities between baby boomers and centenarians, how you could think of centenarians as baby boomers who were 40 years ahead of their time. One of the arguments I hear about living to 100 is centenarians are just people who won the genetic jackpot. The best research on genetics and longevity comes from Denmark, where they have very good statistics. They compared identical twins and fraternal twins and how long they lived. They crunched the numbers and they came up with 30% of your longevity is genetic. That means that 70% is the lifestyle that you choose to live and the choices that you make. I think the 30% figure is actually a little high because Denmark has a much more homogeneous population than the United States. With a more heterogeneous population in the U.S., I would expect even more variation and probably put the number at about 25%. Thomas Perls, author of Living to 100, suggests that maybe centenarians have a unique gene that enables them to live so much longer. This is certainly a possibility. Even if that is the case, I would keep in mind that genetics is a constantly shifting playing field. For example, in a previous program, evolutionary geneticist Sharon Moalem talked about how genes that help us survive in one situation can cause problems in another situation. In a recent program, Dr. Vincent Giapopop talked about how changing our nutrition or changing supplements can turn genes on and turn genes off, and how genes are being turned on and off all the time. Further, that our attitudes, how well we're handling stress, even our beliefs, influence which genes are turned on and which genes are turned off. Medical advances often nullify the effect of health problems and genetic problems. Vaccines present a good example of how diseases that once killed millions are easily cured or, better yet, prevented. And then finally, we have genetic engineering, which probably in the next decade or two or three at the most is going to finger which genes turn on aging and be able to reprogram our genes to help us live longer and healthier. Finally, just for fun, I was talking with Lynn and I said, Homework has two happy 100th birthday cards. When somebody has their 100th birthday, I bet they get dozens of the same two cards. And Lynn commented that she had recently seen an article in the New York Times that said Hallmark has sold 85,000 of those happy 100th birthday cards. So she's going to help out by adding to her website alternative birthday cards that she'll be able to download and print. Baby steps. Every show I try to share with you some little tweak that you can do that'll help you live longer and healthier and happier, the goal of our program. This week, it should be a no-brainer. Add centenarians to your list of heroes. Keep your eyes and ears alert for news about centenarians. And if you get a chance, take a centenarian to lunch. I have a Google alert to flag any articles on centenarians, and I've been delighted with some of what I've read, except for that centenarian in the Philippines who is an indigenous native and attributes her longevity to eating termite eggs. Emails. I love getting those emails. Send them to radio@agelesslifestyles.com. That's radio@agelesslifestyles.com. Emails this week commented on our program with Lynette Padua, author of Quick Answer Me Before I Forget the Question. Most of the emails said that they had thought of aging as kind of a grim reality, and Lynette's advice and perspective was refreshing in seeing aging as kinder and gentler and much more manageable. I would even say, if you're going to another country, you could go without a guidebook, but why would you want to do that? I thought Lynette Padua was just an excellent guide and resource for the nitty-gritties of aging. This is Dr. Michael Bricky with Ageless Lifestyles Radio on webtalkradio.net. If you'd like to get more practical advice on how to live longer, healthier, and happier, go to drbricky.com, that's drbricky.com, or agelesslifestyles.com, and sign up for my free email newsletter, the Defy Aging Newsletter. Each free issue has a practical baby step, a relevant quote, and some relevant humor. It's a great way to keep making little tweaks that help you on your path to becoming one of those vital centenarians like Elsa. Until next week, this is anti-aging psychologist Dr. Michael Bricky, thanking you for joining us on our quest to live longer and healthier and happier.